recorded on January the 24th, 1962, medium Leslie Flint.
No. They're all right.
Haven't you?
Pardon?
A little hum.
Yes, we have. Now, where's this?
You're quite all right?
Yes, thank you.
Everything works?
Yes, yes, thank you.
All right.
Nice mild day.
Do you find that your recordings have been all right in the past?
Yes, they have. There's one failure, you remember, something I didn't do. And then I got home and was a blank tape.
Mm.
But on the whole, I've sung very good ones.
Did the machine that you have make that noise when you first had it?
Yes, I think it's always had more noise than most.
How long have you had it?
1 year.
Yeah. You had it, haven't been done to it at all?
Yes, at Christmas I had something done. I think it was the accelerator wasn't working very well.
Yeah.
It wasn't erasing, you know. I wanted to erase some music and it just wouldn't. But I'd be delighted to use yours.
Well, it will save a lot of trouble for people.
Oh, it will. Hello, Mickey. Very well, thank you.
Very pleased to see you.
Thank you very much.
Are you keeping well?
Yes, thank you.
Good. Did you have a nice Christmas?
Yes, very, thank you. Did you?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Good. Mickey, I wanted to ask you, we always call you Mr. Flint's Control. Could you tell me what that really means?
Well, control, I suppose, really means a person who takes over or takes charge of under the prevailing conditions that are apparent at the time of communication, because they do vary considerably.
Yes.
And therefore, because it is my particular job to be close to the medium, to work and to help, particularly newcomers through, in other words, I act to control the proceedings from the point of view of the conditions to which I'm more familiar than most. Whereas,
yes,
for instance, a relation or a friend or someone who's never had any experience of communication, they need control, they need advice, they need help. In other words, I sort of act in that capacity of controlling the conditions that are prevalent at the time of communication.
Yes, you're a master of ceremonies, really, aren't
you?
Well,
yes, I suppose you could say that. And also, I serve a purpose, and that's that sometimes people are very apprehensive as to this sort of thing in the first instance, whether it's people on your side or people sometimes on this.
Yes.
They're both unfamiliar with the conditions and what is going to happen, and they need advice and they need help, and sometimes it's very necessary that I'm sort of cheerful and amusing.
Yes.
To relieve the tension.
Yes, well, thank you for telling me that.
You see, there's often a tremendous tenseness in the atmosphere at such sessions as this. You see, people who come are over-anxious, perhaps they're also a little emotional, and they get into a sort of state of nerves, mm-hmm. and they need calming, and they need amusing to some extent to make them forget themselves.
Yes. Oh, yes, oh, that's splendid, Licky.
Well, it's not an easy job, but I love doing it.
Yes.
And I meet all sorts of people.
Yes. And how do we look to you?
Well, I suppose more or less the same as you look to yourselves in the mirror.
Really?
Well, you see, the point is that we can see you in a different capacity. I mean, we can see you in a physical sense, as you see yourself or know yourself. But, of course, we have an enlarged view, too, because we can see you as you really are. That is, on a spiritual basis, too. We can see your auric emanations, for instance. For instance, when a person comes here for the first time, the first thing we do is to try to tune into that person. But the most important thing to us is to see what the auric emanation is like. If they have an auric emanation that is conducive to produce results, then we can go ahead.
Yes.
But occasionally somebody comes and the whole atmosphere around them is so difficult and so materialistic, and that approach, mental approach, is so wrong that sometimes we just come from example, for sorry, but we can't help you, or perhaps for some reason, even beyond our control, we don't even make a contact at all.
Yes, well, it's most interesting.
You see, for instance, you might come like today and we get on very well, but you might suddenly decide to bring a friend. Well, that friend may to you, all outward appearances, be quite a nice person, and probably is. But when they come here from a psychic point of view, they're a dead loss.
Really?
I mean, for instance, a person might pretend to you and say, oh, I'm tremendously interested, I would love to go to a meeting like that, you see.
Yes.
And you may bring them along, but they may not really genuinely be like that at all. It may be some sort of idle curiosity. It might be that they have a very strong inner dislike of the whole subject, and they might even come with a motive of destroying rather than helping and attempting to make a genuine communication that will be of real help to them. You see, the motive behind a person's coming here is to us very important. And the first thing we do is we assess that person by the atmospheric conditions around them, and also, above all, by the auric emanation, which tells us all we need to know.
Yes, that's very nice. Well, you have a very important job, really, Nicky, haven't you?
Oh, yes, and it is a job that one, to some extent, has to train for, I would say to a great extent. I was for several years with a medium before I was ever allowed to communicate, let alone take any control.
Really? Yes.
Okay. You see, people often say, oh, well, why do they send someone through like Mickey, who obviously, to all outward appearances, isn't very advanced? But then again, what they don't realise is that communication, to have any real effect, to become a reality, it means that we, no matter who we are, what sphere we come from, we've got to lower our vibrations, we've got to lower our conditions to an extent that we tune in to some extent with you and your world.
Yes.
And that in itself is not an easy thing to do.
Yes.
And therefore someone like myself who deliberately has over a long period trained themselves to do that, often I, for instance, can relay messages where the person you may want to communicate with or someone else may want to contact who comes from a different sphere and finds it difficult or in fact impossible to lower the vibration to communicate on your side, then I relay their messages for them.
Yes. Well, thank you, Mickey. Well, I think you are very advanced, really.
Well, I do my best, Auntie.
You just assume this innocent air, but actually I feel quite sure you
Well,
know a
I
great
suppose
deal.
Really, because I'm in a sense more living on two worlds than the average communicator. In other words, what I mean by that is that I'm so tuned into the medium's vibrations, because I have to be if I'm going to work with him in the way I do, and also I have my own separate existence over here, which is on an entirely different sphere.
Yes.
In a sense, I have to live in two worlds at the same time.
Yes. Well, I think it's grand.
And that's where I think also the problem arises with mediums.
Yes.
For one thing, they have to be very, very sensitive. They have to have a feeling of vocation, at least the genuine good medium should, feel that they have a work to do which is greater than themselves or their own personal interests. They have to give up their time, they have to give up their whole way of life, really, or should do. I don't say they all do by any means, But the point is that it means that the medium, if he's going to be a good medium, to do the work in the proper way, must, to some extent, raise himself above the material conditions which are prevalent in your world. Yes. In other words, he's got to be able to lose himself when he sits, at least, from material things.
Yes, yes.
It's not an easy job being a medium.
Yeah, I'm sure it isn't.
And I think it's only natural that often mediums do fail. They fail themselves and they fail us. But then, of course, we anticipate that to some extent. We don't expect our mediums to be perfect any more than our sitters are perfect. But we do realise the problems that arise, and it does behove a medium to endeavour, particularly at sittings, to raise his mind and his thoughts on a higher level. Of course, if he or the medium in question can raise his personal self in ordinary routine life, which is essential really, then of course that's even better.
Yes, well, thank you very much, thank you.
It's very difficult because, you see, there are varying conditions and forms of mediumship, and certain forms of mediumship which are on a much lower plane, and then they don't require, it's not so necessary for the mediums concerned to be such nice people.
Yeah.
You see, the point is that like attracts like. The higher evolved the medium, then the better it is for communication for higher souls. That's quite a big problematic job.
I'm sure there is.
Hello.
Hello. Is that you, darling?
Yes, I was listening with great interest to what our young friend was saying to you and how right he is.
Yes.
I don't think anyone in your world, even those who profess to know a great deal about this subject, can fully realize what a tremendous undertaking it is. It's very complex communication, and there are definitely times when it is practically impossible to make a contact, even with the finest mediums. There are times when their powers, for some reason or other, do not function, and sometimes the conditions that are prevalent in the sitting are far from helpful, and in consequence it would perhaps even be dangerous to try to make a communication. It would perhaps impair the medium's health, or perhaps it would open the door to some entity that may be standing around, because after all, there are many people who gather here when we communicate, and some of them are necessarily nearer the earth, and in consequence, not necessarily very advanced. And one has to protect oneself, and protect one's medium, and protect one's dear ones on earth against these influences, which are not necessarily evil, but they are often very earthbound, and of course you do know only too well that such things as impersonation can take place. And although it isn't often, it is possible. And in consequence, whenever we endeavour to make a contact, we first assure ourselves that the conditions are right, that they're good, you see.
Yes, well, I think you're most fortunate, dear. I don't remember any conditions here that you haven't been able
well,
to...
Well, frankly, quite honestly, taking it by and large, I'm very happy here. I'm very, very happy in the communication. Usually the channel is pretty clear, and I can come and speak to you quite well without any real effort. But there are places that I've been to, and you've not necessarily been present, but I've gone there out of interest, because I believe that one should learn as much as one can about it, and I've gone because I wanted to know as much as I could about communication, and there have been places that I've gone to where, quite frankly, I wouldn't want you to go, and I wouldn't myself want to make any contact.
Yeah.
You see, the point is that it is vitally important that the conditions should be on the highest possible level for good communication.
Yes.
And that is why I'm not very happy myself about these groups of people who gather together where you have very mixed vibrations, where you have a great deal of confusion even in the communication. And indeed, in some instances, I consider that they are quite dangerous.
Yes. Now, darling, you were going to tell me about your early days in the spirit world. You You described last time the wonderful feeling, the gorgeous feeling of throwing off the physical body and various other things, and you said this time you would tell me about your early experiences here and perhaps sum up your 3.5 years.
Well, as far as it's in my power to do so, I will, but one comes up against certain problems in trying to recount these experiences, because there are very many, and some of them indeed one could not find ways of expressing to you the occurrences. And then again, of course, time. You just say, I've been here roughly 3.5 years. Well, time to you is important, but time to us is not important. And what may seem a long time to you may seem a short time to us, and so on. 3.5 years is not a long time over here. And then again, of course, we don't measure it in the same sense. We are more conscious of time by experiences. Certainly we're not conscious of time by the clock or by the usual experience of time as you know it. We don't have the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun. We're not subject to influences which you are influenced by.
Yeah.
And when I take all these things into account, I do realize that it does rather limit me.
Yes.
And I've got to bring things down also to a material level for you or anyone else to comprehend or understand. I mean, for instance, when I tell you about our way of life here, and I talk to you about our homes and our various buildings in which we sometimes congregate for various reasons, such as to listen to some soul who comes from a higher sphere, who acts as a teacher, or perhaps when we gather to listen to great music, or perhaps in some great open-air amphitheater where we have enormous gatherings of souls for various reasons. These things we bring down as best we can to a level that you can grasp. But it's only, in a sense, touching the fringe.
Yes.
Because we are not confined in time or in space in the same sense. It's true that our bodies to us are as real as yours are to you, and that all around and about us we have nature in all its magnificence and glory. And if one could visualize this from the point of view that everything that you have that is beautiful as of nature, we have also, but on a grander scale, you have some idea of what our world is like. But even then, endeavoring to give you this experience is limited. When I first came here, I did not take very long. And there again, one must remember, when I say it did not take me very long, it's only my idea of time, it's only my consciousness of time, to adjust myself.
Yes. I'm sure mediums have said that.
One of the things that interested me most, I think, when I became fully conscious and aware of my surroundings, was being taken to a vast building, which I suppose to all outward appearances one would say was a hospital, or a large building in which many people were living, a very natural kind of an existence, but at the same time in varying degrees of consciousness. Some of these cells were obviously cells who had only recently come over and who were gradually becoming adjusted to their new life and their new circumstances. And this vast building, which housed so many people of varying types, were going through a stage of replacement or a new initiation.
Yes.
And I was told that I could, if I wished, for a time work among these people. At first I thought this was rather an extraordinary thing to be asked to do, because I did not feel that I myself was in any way capable or has it, I realized after a time that what they were trying to ask me to do was a natural thing, because among these people were many who were beginning to adjust themselves and beginning to see that they had the opportunity of a new life, but they had to change themselves. In other words, you might almost say this was a place where souls were psychologically being attended to, where they were being given a new ideas, new hopes, and that they were gradually being helped to lose their fears, because fear is a very predominant thing with the majority of people before they pass over. I think it's not only fear of the physical condition in which they pass, but it's obviously a fear of the unknown, a fear of is there a life after death, and if there is, what is it going to be like? And there's always the fear of retribution, this instilled theology that is pumped into people for so many years becomes to them something which affects them very much at the time of passing, this heaven and hell, this sort of realization that they've been given, that unless they have fallen in with certain religious beliefs, that they will be punished and that they will probably go to a very low sphere and possibly never arise from it. In other words, here this is a condition of life which a lot of people find themselves, in which they have to readjust themselves, they have to rid themselves of a lot of earthly thoughts, and they have to try to realize that much that they had been taught was false, and therefore that did not apply to them at all here. In other words, they had to lose a great deal before they could hope to gain anything.
Yes, that's very interesting.
And so it is that psychologically, I suppose you could say, these people were being attended by experts and also by people who themselves were gradually becoming more aware, more conscious, and they in turn helped those who were less efficient, less able to comprehend. And so it is that you found many people here in varying degrees or states of mind. And some, for instance, the very bad cases, you would find people who were still going through mentally the earthly existence. They were still going through, in some instances, even the last few weeks or months of the earthly illness. Now, this may strike some people as being very unjust, and possibly in a sense it could be accepted as that, but it isn't necessarily so, because what one must remember is that a person after death is really no different to what they were before immediately. You see, what really counts here is the state of mind, the character of the person that has been built up through the earth years, that which they developed into, here finds its full expression even more so on earth. No longer is the soul and the spirit, the personality, the individuality, confined to a physical body with all its confining conditions. Here it is freed, it is more rampant, and therefore, in some instances where people have clung very strongly to certain ideas, certain thoughts, they become very much stronger even. And it is important and essential that these people should be cared for, that they should be made to realize that these things within themselves are holding them back. They are barriers that they must break down. Old ideas must be taken from them, they must lose these thoughts. In other words, they must think differently. And to do this, it requires a great deal of help, a great deal of encouragement, and apart from the experts whose task it is to care for these patients, I suppose you could call them, there are many people who are themselves perhaps not so advanced, but who are sufficiently advanced to be companions and out with them into the countryside, into nature, and under the calming influence it is brought to bear upon them, they begin to themselves to be more calm, more passive, more receptive, and they gradually lose their fear, and they gradually become more sound, more solid, more able to cope, you'd say, more able to visualize the possibilities of their new life. Yes. It's a gradual changing that takes place, and in some cases it may take, as you say, time, a long time, in others it happens very quickly. And I was rather surprised that after coming here so short a time, that I should be privileged, in a sense, to be able to help in this direction. But then again, I realized, and I realize even more now, that looking back on my life, that I always had an inner consciousness, an inner realization, which may not always have been apparent. I may not have talked about it a great deal, but I had a realization deeper in myself about these things. I don't know if you realize that.
Yes, so I did, because you were a great thinker, weren't you?
Yes, I read a good deal, but I was a great thinker, and I used to turn a lot of things over in my mind about the possibilities of life after death and what it would be like. And I don't think I really had any fear of it.
No. Well, I'm so glad you've got on so well, darling.
I find that teaching gives me great joy, and I do a great deal of teaching.
Yes, and you're still interested in music?
Oh, yes. Music plays a vital and very important part in my life.
Yes.
I'm interested in so many things, so many aspects of life here interest and appeal to me. I'm interested very much in architecture.
Yes, you're going to tell me about that, you said,
yes,
sometime.
Well, the thing that fascinated me so much when I came here was the fact that there were so many magnificent buildings, many of them of different periods, that is, I refer to earthly periods of architecture, and many forms of architecture which I'd never seen on earth, and the construction was so beautiful, and what amazed me was, too, that the substance which was used to create these buildings was in itself so sort of beautiful. It was as if they gave off, or did give off, or don't, they certainly do give off, a sort of colouring. It's not actually in the material itself, I've discovered that, but it's a substance which has the ability, I don't know how to express this, to give off varying shades and hues which come from the conditions created by the people, not only who built or helped to erect and design, but the people who inhabit.
Yes.
I find this almost impossible to explain.
Oh, I think I can understand that, yes.
I mean, for instance, on your side you have a house which is designed and built, and it has some character of its own. But the character of the building doesn't really become apparent until it has been lived in, and it has been decorated, and it has been furnished, and above all by the very thoughts of the people who dwell there. For instance, an old house in your world has been built for many centuries, has had many contributions made to it by varying people at different times, and they've all added or given something. In some cases, perhaps they detracted. But here you find that people do give so much more, and it's much more apparent. Their thoughts are much more vital, much more alive, and you are conscious of not only the building, but of the people who created it. You sort of know something about them by merely looking at the building. You are conscious of the people who live in the building. You feel, indeed you do, you know them, even before you meet them.
Isn't that interesting? Darling, have you met your hero, Sir Christopher Wren?
I most certainly have, and that was one of the greatest of the joys that I think that I have experienced, because he is one of the great designers here, one of the great architects, and he does take a vivid and wonderful interest in all forms of building here,
yes,
on many spheres. And of course, there again, one must remember that the spheres, which are so varied, each have their own type of architecture, or at least they have their own sort of conditional, if you like, architecture, according to the peoples and the mentalities and the development or lack of it of the people. On the lower spheres, of course, you do not get these quite fabulous, quite wonderful artistic buildings. You get buildings which are of a much lower order, which probably have little, or from my point of view, nothing to recommend them. But because they are on the particular sphere in which they are created, they are very typical, shall we say, of the people. You see, that is a point that,
yes,
I want very much to stress, that a person cannot create here on a particular sphere until he or she has made it possible by their very thoughts and their actions, their lives. In other words, you see, although people progress, as they progress to a higher sphere, and they rid themselves of a great deal that is necessary, the sphere which they have left still is representative of the people who still inhabit it, and those who contributed to it leave behind some part of themselves. I don't know how to explain this, but you see, we progress from stage to stage, from place to place, from condition to condition, and in consequence, in the process of change, we have contributed something to the past. You see, now in your world, you are living in a world today which really is the product of past lives, past minds, and to some extent you're suffering from the wrong thinking, the wrong actions of people who went before you. The world is always creating. Man is given free will. Man is given the opportunity to do great things, and often, in fact, he does in certain directions particularly. But man also, unfortunately, builds and creates through his mind things which are not happy things, which are very sad things. For instance, the fear in which you live today is man-made. How people often say, oh, why does God permit this, or why does God allow that? God does not interfere with free will. Man has been given this choice, this free will, this ability to create. And if he creates by wrong thinking an unhappy state of affairs, then it is entirely his own fault. It's part of his development, his evolution.
Yes, I see. And what is it?
Although we consider ourselves separate individuals, which we are, and it's true enough, we must remember that we are all part of each other, that we're all, to some extent, dependent upon each other, and that we all contribute towards each other's happiness or unhappiness. And that is why we should realize, in the first instance, that it behoves us all to give out love, to give out all that is good from within ourselves, and in consequence, then, the whole scheme of life could be changed. The world in itself in which you live would be a vastly different world. But man is taught, unfortunately, from childhood. It's just fantastic when one thinks about it, but even from the very beginning of life, it is instilled, you might say, into the mind that your particular country, for instance, is more advanced or a better country. Your way of life is better. Your form of education is better. In fact, man is given false ideas about himself, about his upbringing, about his country, about his religion. You see, man has this egotistical idea that he is right, that his particular way of life is the best way of life, or his particular religion is the only religion is contributing to the common good. But usually, of course, invariably, even in families, apart from nations, you have this unfortunate attitude of mind that perhaps by some caste distinction or some form of education being better than another form of education, and so on and so on, you get all this sort of personal element which inflates often the ego of the individual, gives him a complex, often gives him the realization that he is better than the next man, and so on and so on. All these things are, in a sense, false, because they separate man, they separate nations. The time must come when people will realize that in humanity there is tremendous scope, in all humanity. I'm not suggesting that education isn't a good thing. It's a very good thing if it's the right form of education. Man must better himself. But in bettering himself, he must not neglect his duty to the rest of humanity. He must endeavor to live in harmony with other nations, with other peoples, must endeavor to see their point of view.
I suppose we will eventually, don't you think? We're working that way.
Well, I'm only hoping so. But, I mean, but one can only say that the state of the world today, which is really through fear, one nation fears the other nation, and in consequence you amass enormous weapons of defense, so-called defense. No one really trusts another, or no nation trusts another, and untold millions of pounds are spent on preparation for annihilation.
Darling, do you know, I think Mrs. North was telling us that on February the 1st, all the planets are in conjunction. There are going to be terrific upheavals here. Do you know about that on your side?
I know about what is contemplated.
Yes, I don't understand.
I don't think that it will have any effect, hardly any effect upon the Earth.
No, well, Mrs. North was saying that perhaps never before have the planets been absolutely all in conjunction, whatever that means. Because they will be on February the 4th.
Yes, yes, this I do know about. But I do not think that it will have any effect at all on the Earth.
Oh, good. That's really
certainly
really
not for its detriment.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you, darling. That's wonderful.
I look forward so much to these talks. And I do feel perhaps the sort of things we talk about will no doubt be useful and helpful to other people.
I'm sure they will, darling.
Anyway, I must go because it does take a lot to keep talking for any length of time. But all my love and blessings.
Yes. Thank you, darling.
Next time I'll try and go further into all this in more
detail.
Think
more about the architecture.
Yes, all right.
Yes.
Well, God bless, my dear.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
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 Goodbye, Mickey.
Goodbye, Mickey.
Goodbye.
He does very well. He's very informative, isn't he?
Yes, very. Yes, he's a wonderful
communicator,
isn't he?
Wonderful.
I think, you know, he was a thinker before, you know, and I think it must help, don't you, very much.
Was he a musician on your side?
No. Oh. He was some
doctor.
Books publisher.
A publisher?
Yes.
Any particular kind of book, was it?
Chiefly religious.
Really?
Yes. I mean, he's very much against Orthodox religion now, isn't he?